All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fucksters? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is WTF. It's my podcast. Welcome to it. Nice to have you. Today on the show, the beautifully sensitive and filthy Robert Kelly. Robert Kelly is here. I fucking love Robert Kelly. He's on Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. The season finale actually airs this Thursday, September 1st on FX. He's a great guy. So look forward to that. That's happening. Also, something interesting happens. Now, look, I get a lot of records. I get a lot of people sampling me. I get people asking if they can use pieces of the podcast for things. And usually it's cool. It's cool with me. Do a little appropriation. Move it out into the world. If it fits your thing, do it. But this has never happened. There's a band in Asheville, North Carolina, I believe is where they're from, the Get It Right Band. And they actually wrote a song. Well, I actually wrote it in a way. I co-wrote a song. They wrote a song using bits and pieces of my monologues and things. They sang it and everything. I didn't sing on it or anything, but it's all my words put together by the band, the Get It Right Band, and they recorded it. And the song is called However Broken It Is. And we're going to play it at the end of the show instead of me, you know, me playing guitar. All right. So that's going to happen. Couple of things, some business here, personal business. You have until this Thursday, September 1st, to get my special More Later for $7.99. It's available exclusively at WTFpod.com as a digital download, and then it will be on iTunes in September for a little more dough. Go to WTFpod.com. There's a link right on the homepage under today's episode, as well as in the merch section. Also, I believe Carnegie Hall will sell out. My November 4th date in New York at Carnegie Hall, the tickets are going well. And I'm hearing from people that it's going to sell out. And it's a couple months away, so I would get tickets for that if you'd like to witness that. It might be the end of everything for me, the Carnegie Hall thing. Don't know how I can follow it. So whether it goes well or okay or great or horrendous, whatever spectacle happens, it might be it, but I doubt it. I doubt it. I'm just being dramatic, and I'm trying to frame it in a way that elevates its importance even more, so I can really be hard on myself as I go towards that. I'm going to be running that set the 9th and the 10th of September. I'm going to be in Rochester, New York at the Comedy Club. I'm doing four shows there. I believe my father's going to be at one of them because he's out in his car with his wife driving around the country. That's what they enjoy doing. But I don't know how those tickets are selling, but if you're in the Rochester area, come down. I'm working it. I'm doing the thing. All right? So that those are the immediate ones on the horizon. What else? Oh, yes. I remember. My girlfriend, my significant other, my partner, however you want to say it, Sarah Kane, the painter, she's got a big show of her new work in New York City. If you live in New York City and you like the art, you like the painting, this is a big deal, man. She did some bold shit. The show is called Dark Matter. It has nothing to do with me. It's September 8th at Gallery Lelong. That's G-A-L-E-R-I-E, Gallery Lelong, L-E-L-O-N-G-E. September 8th, dudes and ladies and dudes, women, men, in between, whatever you are, this show's going to be spectacular. She painted the floor, man. She painted the fucking floor. I don't, you know, it's a whole other world, but I know she was working on it. The big, giant linoleum pieces that she put together, that she painted in her studio and then shipped. So the entire floor of the Gallery Lelong on September 8th is going to be a painting. And then there's going to be paintings on the wall. It's going to be fucking wild, man. So if you're in New York, September 8th, Gallery Lelong, Dark Matter, paintings by Sarah Kane. I'm with her. You know what I'm saying? Huh? You know what I'm saying? What else? What else can I tell you about? Right now, I don't do this often, but I'm going to do it now. I'm going to read a few emails or a few parts of emails because everybody seemed to love the Gottfried the Gottfried Shorty, as I call it. You know, Gottfried came in here to plug his Showtime special. But people like me and Gottfried. This is from Robert, subject line, more Gottfried. Dear Mark Maron, I'm a big fan of your podcast, and I've listened to nearly all of them. I loved listening to the Godfrey episode and enjoyed his return. I dare to say that it is my favorite episode. I think the kernel of a new podcast or television show are there. So if you ever do make Mark effortlessly shits on Godfrey's career and dreams, I guess that'd be the name of the show, let me know. The subtle insulting barbs from you and his reactions have me rolling for all the time he has spent on your show. So thanks, Rob. And thank you, Rob, for that email. Yes, me and Gottfried have a thing that we do. There is no doubt about that, and it is always funny. And then here's an interesting thing, because another approach to the Gottfried interview from Ty, subject line Gottfried interview. I'm just going to read this section. The reason I write today is because I just listened to your interview with Gottfried. It was the funniest interview and riffing I've heard on your show yet. It made me think about the racial tension in our country right now and within the city and state that I live in, Atlanta, Georgia. It was extremely refreshing to hear two men of different races identified, relate, and joke with each other in such a comfortable, candid, and jovial way. It is my personal opinion that you should strongly consider Gottfried's suggestion of having him on the show regularly to promote and cultivate a message of hope when it comes to the relationships that occur between people of all walks of life. During this time of tension and uncertainty as to the future of our country, it would be a welcomed breath of fresh air. Thanks for your hard work and dedication to preserve a message of honesty and hope. That's from Ty. So, okay, I guess it's on me and Gottfried. I guess it's on our shoulders. We're going to have to figure out, you know, how to save the country just by me busting his balls. Who knew that it had that possibility? Of course it does. Of course, Gottfried and I can almost single-handedly change the course of this nation. I like the idea of that. I'm also getting a lot of emails from conservatives. And I know your first thought is like, oh shit, yeah, they're dogging you. They're not. A lot of them appreciated my relative empathy on my poetic interpretation of why people vote for Trump. That's before the Roseanne Barr interview. And I've had several of these emails from conservatives basically saying, look, we're disappointed. You know, you and I think differently, but, you know, I'm a conservative. You're a liberal or whatever the differences are. But they want to make it clear that they are not on board with this disaster. And this guy wrote a very thoughtful, long email about religion, about this and that, this fella named Brandon. But this paragraph, I thought I would share with you. I wrote this email to let you know not all conservatives support this idiot, and I won't allow myself to vote for him. Although I also see Hillary as a bad choice, I don't see how I can't vote for her based on the fact that I cannot support Trump because he is outright prejudiced, and I see him as a severe setback for America in general. I'm not the only one who feels this way. I plan on raising my children in a world where they can look around and see everyone treated fairly and receiving their treatment based on the decisions that they make as a person and not their skin color, place of origin, sexual preference, geographical location, or religious beliefs. I realize that's a pipe dream, but it would be a good world if we all took on the you be you and let me be me tone to things that aren't harmful to anyone's health and well-being. I just read that section because I think it's an important sentiment. I think it's a very important sentiment to try to think about not your anger that may or may not be because of America, but to make a decision that may have some bearing on the future well-being of the country and the people in it, and not let the worst of us dictate what the rest of us will be subject to. Now, look, before I bring Bobby into the conversation, Bobby Kelly, I got to tell you, I love Robert Kelly. He's appeared on my television show. He's also appeared on Louis' show. He's obviously in Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. He's a great comedian and a very sweet man. And, you know, I think the sweet man part gets lost because he's such a character. But, man, he's always been a nice guy, big heart, and just he's helped me a lot in my life just by being who he is. And nobody fucking kills harder than this fucker. On stage, he's a fucking killer, and he's honest, and he's filthy, and it's beautiful. And I was thrilled to have him on. It took a while to get him in here just for, you know, because he lives on the East Coast. But this is great. It's great. I love talking to guys. I like talking to Bobby, and we don't get to talk enough. It's funny, before I bring up Bobby, like, you know, a lot of times I don't do much. I don't socialize much. But, you know, for the first time in a long time, I went over to Bill Burr's house, and we had a cigar just, you know, like in the afternoon. Me and Bill out on his deck, smoked a cigar, had a nice two-hour conversation about life, the future, career, stuff, family stuff. And it was nice. It was off the clock, and we had a nice time. We're going to try to do a little more. As I said before, the finale of Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll premieres, it doesn't premiere. It airs Thursday, September 1st. That's this Thursday on FX. This is me and Robert Bobby Kelly. You like knives and mid-century furniture?
I love knives. I think it's all this shit is from my childhood, I think.
Well, that was what cool shit was. Like, a buck knife was the coolest fucking thing. Like, my dad had a buck knife, and I was like, oh, that's a buck knife. And he wouldn't let you touch it.
Nope.
And then...
Every once in a while.
Right.
My grandfather. I didn't have my dad, but my grandfather would let me whittle some shit.
With his buck knife?
Yeah, like a cross.
Yeah.
Or, you know...
Yeah. Only religious items?
Yeah. No, he... Yeah, I remember. I've loved knives ever since. And buck knives are the best.
That's what I hear. Are they, like, they make fancy artists, like, artisanal, you know, blacksmith knives now?
I have one.
You have fancy
one? I had
a
really great knife maker make me a custom hunting knife.
Really?
Yeah, I got on a YouTube spiral one night about, you know, just the end of the world, and I learned how to make fire and what animals to hunt and how to, like, field dress a deer in a
small... Oh, really?
Yeah, I just learned, I was just spent... probably around 12 hours.
But field dressing and deer, that's something I would think you'd have to try once or twice to get the hang of. I don't think you could just watch a YouTube thing. And
I watched probably 3 hours of field dressing deers. I know that right now, if we killed a deer.
If you hit one with your car, you could.
I could field dress that deer.
Yeah.
I didn't know, like, inside you're connected through your throat.
Yeah.
And your asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And everything in the middle is just hanging in there.
Yeah.
So if you cut the throat and the asshole,
yeah,
you just pull everything else out.
Right.
I didn't know that. I thought it was kind of attached to inside, but it's just you're
it's just floating in there.
Your body is just floating this shit.
What did you do? Did you look at YouTube's of field dressing humans too? Why? Are you
still- No. Well, it would be the same thing. I would just imagine it's the same thing.
Yeah, probably.
But it's like, you know, like. Like, and it, you always think, like, the end of the world, every movie, the guy goes out and gets,
yeah,
just goes and kills a deer.
Right.
Immediately.
Right.
It's like, that's the dumbest shit ever, unless you have, like, a tribe to feed.
Right.
You want to go kill, like, a little squirrel or...
Just to eat for then.
Just to eat for a couple
of
days.
But what about, did you learn how to make jerky and cure shit and, you smoke it?
You smoke
right,
it,
so
yeah.
Maybe a deer would be a good idea if you fucking saw one, even if it wasn't a tribe.
Yeah, but, I'm going to smoke fucking, you know, 100 pounds of deer meat for me and my wife and my 3-year-old.
It sounds like a smart thing to do.
I was thinking of people, like, if the apostle does come, the apocalypse comes.
Yeah.
Like, who goes immediately?
Oh, you mean if the biblical apocalypse comes or just in
zombie
general?
Zombie apocalypse in general. What a biblical, it's just over. We have to go to, like, right now, no electricity, no...
Oh, you mean who doesn't make it immediately because they, like, freak out?
It's just like you add nothing.
Yeah.
You add nothing. You don't hunt.
You're not saying immediately. You're saying the first few months.
First few months is like, dude, your sense of humor is just doesn't exist anymore.
It's not going to get you anywhere.
Nothing's funny anymore. Yeah.
And you can't charm people. Yeah.
Your setup punch tag was great and that you know math was awesome, but there's no more money.
Yeah. And no one's looking for a laugh.
I told Noam, the owner of the Comedy Cellar,
dies
immediately. we cut his throat.
Yeah, oh, so that's how they go.
Well,
we're the deciders.
Well, what are we going to need around to debate?
No, I know, but like, you know, why can't he live? And, you know, maybe we live at the cellar.
We don't live in the cell. The cell is gone.
Oh, it's gone. Oh, so the city goes.
The city, we're not.
This is pretty specific.
The city's taken over by
So we're out in the woods. Like, we're supposed to be. homeless people take over the city.
Well, if you remember,
everyone's gonna be homeless, though, right?
The blackout. Remember the blackout?
Yeah.
A couple years after September 11th, there was this blackout in New York City, right?
Yeah, I remember,
all over,
yeah.
Right? And around, I called my wife, and we had this plan. And I was like, "Look, anything happens in the city, you walk the fuck home from wherever you are.
Yeah.
I stay home. If you're home, you stay there.
Yeah.
And that's where we meet. So the blackout happens.
Yeah.
I go home.
You walked.
I was close. Right? So I walked.
Yeah.
So I stopped. There was a couple of delis giving away free ice creams because the fridges were out. So I stopped a couple times.
Oh, so this is before you lived in the country.
Yeah, this is when I lived in Hell's Kitchen.
Okay, okay.
And I call her. I go, "Where are you?" She goes, "I'm downtown. We're having margaritas downtown." I'm like, "Do you remember the fucking plan?" She goes, "What plan?" I go, "It's a blackout." She goes, "So what?" I go, "Fucking planes went into a building."
Yeah.
In walking distance from where. I go, "Get the fuck home." So she walks home.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the city started going to chaos.
Yeah.
Like, regular squares, pedestrians were directing traffic.
Yeah.
Because people were almost getting murdered by other car, you know, other people driving.
That's what I love about New York. People fucking step in. Like, there's no other city like that.
Right.
Somebody goes down, three guys are like, "What's the problem? What happened?"
Right.
Go tell a guy. You know what I
mean? Go tell a guy.
But it happens immediately. I love that about New York.
But here's what happens at night with no lights. You know what New York City becomes?
What?
Fucking New Hampshire.
Yeah. Yeah?
Dude, there's no...
Nobody's out.
There's no lights and no electricity in New York.
Yeah, nothing to do.
You can't see your hand in front of your face. It's fucking New Hampshire.
Yeah.
It's like being in the White Mountains, okay?
Well, right.
It's now,
right,
all of a sudden, who is fine in those conditions? Homeless people, dude.
Mm-hmm.
We walked up to 9th Ave or 8th from we lived on 43rd and 10th or 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked two blocks. There was a barrel on fire and homeless guys just walking around grabbing titties.
Yeah.
And grabbing ass. Just coming up and going, "Her, yeah." That's all you heard was, "Her, yeah." And then, "Oh!" My friend's chick just starts screaming. She's like, "Somebody just grabbed my vagina." Like a guy walked
just
up
out of the dark
in the darkness and just grabbed a vag.
Yeah.
And went, "Ah."
And that's it.
And actually like gave that little, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like, "We're out. We're going home." It was,
yeah.
It was crazy. And we had to, we lived on the 5th floor. Thank God for fucking, I didn't have enough money to live. There was people that lived on the 40th floor of our building.
Oh.
That there was no lights in the hallways.
And so no elevator.
No elevator.
Yeah.
40 floors. And then you're stuck up there.
So now you live in the country though.
I bought a house. Yeah.
Is there deer up there?
Yeah, we have deer, we have rabbit.
Now that you did this research, have you gone hunting?
No, I don't want to. I don't know if I could kill a deer.
Right.
Like, I'd only kill something if I had to.
Right.
I fly fish.
Yeah, all right.
I do that. I lip hurt. I let them go back.
Yeah.
I don't fucking keep
them. Is that what's called, lip hurt?
Lip hurting.
I thought that killed him. Doesn't kill him?
No.
You hook him and let him go?
You pinch off the hook.
Oh, so it just stays in there?
No, it's like they have a better chance of getting the fuck off. It's harder to fish like that.
Why don't you keep them and eat them?
I don't want to eat them.
Why not? What's the point? Just the sport of sitting there with the fly going back and forth, giving a little line, dropping the fly so the line though just floats down back to you.
Yeah.
That's the meditation of it. I've done that shit. I've tied flies, motherfucker.
I did too.
All right.
There's something about that.
There's
something about being in the water, even having your line in a knot and just untying that knot for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
While everybody else is fishing. Everybody else is catching fish around you, and you're just sitting there quietly
untying
this impossible knot.
That's a good day fishing for you?
I don't mind it.
That just sounded like I'd be watching other people catch fish, going fuck, and like thinking that like when I got my line in, the fish would be gone.
I do that in this business. That's what I do in show business. I just sit there and go, "Fuck, he's got a fish. Fuck, she's got 9 fishes. Fuck, she's got 10,000 fishes, and I have a big knot in front of me that I'm trying to untie for 20 something years."
Maybe that's the show. Bob Kelly unties knots.
Dude, I'm literally at that point in my career where I'm thinking of these weird, like, okay, maybe I can just go and, redo furniture, like find furniture.
Oh, it's great to think that shit, isn't it?
Well, it's scary.
I guess it's scary, you know, because when I was thinking about that, and I think about it now from a different perspective,
yeah.
I'm making a few bucks, and I think of it more in terms of I'd like to not work, but when I was desperate, you know, in the darkness, I could never think, I could not come up with one thing that I could make a living doing.
Yeah.
Maybe teach, try to get a writing job from a buddy.
Yeah, that's what petrifies me. Well, it's weird. It's like, I remember seeing you at the Cellar, sad, mm-hmm. eating ice cream a lot.
Yeah, with the chocolate cake.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember it made me happy. Because, not that you were sad, but that somebody that I knew felt the same way I felt.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like somebody that I never thought you should feel that way.
Right.
Because you were in my eyes, you were one of the chosen ones.
Right.
You were one of the chosen people.
Yeah.
Especially when I came to New York. Yeah. It was like, and then when I saw you sad, it made me happy because I feel fucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then when you made it, I felt really happy for you. Like when you popped off, I remember when you gave your speech at
Montreal. Just for Laughs. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, he did it. You came out of the fucking rubble.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Reached up and grabbed a stick.
Yeah.
And pulled yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's it must feel that feeling. I don't like, what does it feel to actually get pulled out of that?
It's hard to process because, you know, I've said it before, but the one thing guys like me and you, and I think we have a lot in common for whatever fucking reason, because we're both, you know, sick fucks in a way.
Yeah.
But the sort of the ongoing insecurity of not having success and keep trying and sitting there looking at friends and like, fuck, how the fuck did that guy? And then you don't like him and you're not happy when other people get successful. The bitterness, like when I finally found my little place and it seemed to have an impact, like I did something relevant to people and the people enjoyed, I'm making a living and I think it's an honest living. That filled in as something in my self-esteem that can only happen that way.
Yeah.
Because I had sort of resigned the fact that I'm fucked and I'm going to be a sad motherfucker for the rest of my life and I'm not going to make it. So when I started to sort of, and that was on my own terms made a big difference too. But so that thing where I'm like financial insecurity is a little better and just the fact that I achieved something, just the fucking thing that I achieved something on my own terms, I feel good about that. That part of my self-esteem got shored up.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, but even people say money doesn't matter, blah, 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 blah. But it sure does when you can fucking not worry about rent or mortgages.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't need fucking a trust fund for my kid.
Right.
But I would like to not worry about his food.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I would like to not worry about him having to, cuz I was try, you know, my childhood was fucked up. You know, I just remember being fucking sad a lot. I remember just being fucking just sad and lonely. I remember just being alone.
Yeah.
All the fucking time.
Where'd you grow up?
Medford.
You grew up in Medford. Like, you're a real Boston guy. Like, I'm trying to remember when I met you. I met you, you know, when you had hair on your head.
I met you at Catch a Rising Star.
Really? In Cambridge?
First time doing comedy.
In Cambridge?
In Cambridge. I had to sign up on a sheet.
Right, with Robin Horton in the back of the room.
And there was another guy that looked like you. I forget his name.
Criscino.
Might be out of the business now.
Criscino.
Maybe.
Right.
Yeah. I remember you went on.
He was a bigger asshole than me.
Yeah, he was an asshole.
Yeah.
He was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And I remember you went on.
I don't know if he is anymore.
And you were great. And then I went on. I did some. I had 5 minutes or something. I waited 6 months for it. Yeah. I had to wait 6 months for it.
Yeah.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Brought my whole family. And I remember the guy who ran it. Is his name Robin?
Mm-hmm.
Came up to me, says, listen, tell your family I don't want them laughing too much. I went, I don't know, what do you mean? I go, because I don't want them, there's other people going on and I don't want them just to laugh at you.
What a fucking monster he was.
And I go, okay, I don't know how to go up to my family and tell them not to laugh at me. So I had to go up to my family and go, hey guys, make sure you give it up for everybody else too.
Yeah.
You know, and they were like, huh? So, and I remember the guy introduced me.
The fact that you, of all people, like someone like me, who were like, you know, cocky assholes.
Right.
But that we even took that instruction at all. Like, the right response to that is like, all right. And then like, shut the fuck up. What does that even mean? But like, you're like, oh, I better figure out how to frame it for my family that they'll understand.
Well, because I can't make this. It takes me 3 days. Yeah. I need 3 days to make any decision.
Or me too. What is that, man?
If someone comes up to me like that and does that to me, if you give me 3 days and a time machine, I can go back to him and go, you know what? Go fuck yourself. Right. I'm not doing that. My family's here to support me. Fuck you and leave.
Right.
If you give me 3 days. But I cannot make a decision in a moment. I cannot. That's why I admire like Patrice could have an opinion in milliseconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Just be like, that's bullshit. And I'd be like, how do you know that? Like, how do you know it's bullshit? Because it kind of makes sense.
Right.
Like, what he said, you know what?
Yeah.
I don't want the other comics to feel bad.
Right.
Like, maybe he's right.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong? Mm-hmm. Is he right? And then.
Right, because there's a part of us that are people pleasers.
I'm a fucking because I never had somebody telling me, hey, fuck that or fuck them.
Right.
One way or the other. I never had a male figure or an adult tell me be something. Like, I see my kid now, my 3-year-old, and he acts like me.
Right.
He does what I do.
Right.
So good or bad, he's going to be influenced by me.
And
his decision making is going
to
be.
Have you gone out of your way to do it differently?
It's a constant. Every day I think about it.
So wait, your dad wasn't around?
Well, my original dad wasn't around.
Where'd he go?
It's so weird. He was in Vietnam.
Yeah.
My mom had my sister when she was 15, had me when she was 18.
Really?
Irish Catholic home.
Yeah.
So she pretty much, you know, that was.
She was a kid.
She's a kid, yeah. Yeah, she was fucking around in a bush.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Is that what happened?
Well, I don't know, but I would imagine it wasn't very romantic.
Right, you
know
right, right. I mean?
They're probably banging in the back of a Monte Carlo.
Your
or something.
Dad, the Vietnam vet, and your 18-year-old mom.
Well, he went to Vietnam while I was born. He came back all fucked up.
Oh, really?
And him and my mom, you know, there's two sides to the story.
How old are you?
I'm 45.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I never knew him.
Mm-hmm.
They were gone.
Mm-hmm.
She moved back in with my grandmother, so there was 13 of us living in a 3-bedroom.
With your grandmother?
Yeah, so me and my mother and my sister were on a mattress on the floor in my Uncle Sean's room.
Yeah.
Next to a weight bench. You know?
Yeah.
My other uncle Tommy was on the sun porch. My other uncle was in a closet. The other two were down in the basement.
What the fuck?
My aunts shared a bedroom, and then my grandmother and grandfather had a bedroom. And my great-grandmother was there for a minute, but then she passed away.
Out of necessity, I mean.
Yeah, I think they killed her. I think they needed the room. I think one of the uncles took her out.
Yeah.
But
so that's your early childhood memories.
But that was great. Yeah. I remember those times.
Well,
it was
at least
great.
There's people around.
But then, it was great. My uncles are fucking great. I mean, they were just amazing. You know, I remember my uncle would always bring me a cupcake home or something.
Yeah.
And always, when I woke up from a nap, there was always like a little treat or something.
Mm-hmm.
My one uncle was smart. I remember Tommy was smart.
Yeah.
I remember David like knew how to make bow and arrows and fight.
Yeah.
My uncle Jimmy and my uncle Michael was cool with the women. My uncle Jimmy was, you know, the businessman.
Right.
My uncle Sean was like the cop, the blue collar dude. So it was like I had five fathers like right there. And then you had my grandfather who was greatest generation.
Yeah.
World War II.
Yeah.
Coolest motherfucker ever. Had a garden.
Yeah.
Knew how to grow shit, knew how to fix shit. Could talk forever, you know.
How come
I had that there?
Yeah.
Then my grandmother was the best. My two aunts, awesome.
All Irish?
All Irish Catholic.
Yeah.
And then my mother met this fucking dude, Billy.
Yeah.
And she got married to this fucking savage.
Yeah.
This fucking guy who should never have been around children.
Right.
She got married like that. And I thought it was great. I thought it was amazing. I remember.
You liked the guy at first.
Dude, he was so fucking great. He parted his hair to the side. He had a mustache. You know, he had like a nice car.
Right.
And I remember we got an apartment. And I remember walking in. I had my own room.
Yeah.
And I never had my own room. Really? I never had it. I remember walking in and looking up at the lamp. There was like this beautiful, cool lamp.
Yeah.
Like a hanging from the ceiling, this light fixture. And I was like, it looked like a spaceship. And I was like, is that mine? And I remember him going, that's your lamp. And I was like, I love this fucking lamp.
Yeah.
Dude, I loved it. Every day I would come in and go, that's my lamp.
Yeah.
I loved it.
How old were you? Like four, three?
Yeah, I was in kindergarten.
Yeah.
And I remember I had the side room and I had my own TV. I had a toy box full of toys. This room, all this shit, literally out of a movie.
And you, it was just you and your sister?
Me, my sister, my mother. My sister had the same thing right across from me.
What'd this guy do?
He was an insurance adjuster. Uh-huh. He had one of those fucking wheels with a...
Right, the measuring wheel?
Ugh.
Yeah.
Every time I see those, So I remember I was in my room. Everything was great. I had this little side room with two beanbags and a TV, and I was watching TV one night, and I fell asleep from day to night. And I woke up, and it was dark out, and I just heard noise. And I got up, and I remember I was so happy. I was just so fucking happy. And I remember I walked out. I opened the door, and I look out, and my sister, my mother's bent on her knees crying. And then my sister's grabbing the phone, crying, to make a phone call. And I remember he wrapped the phone around her head and then threw it at her head and punched my sister in the stomach. And then I remember my mother saw me, and she ran to get me, and she grabbed my sister, and we went into my sister's bedroom. And I remember I shut the door, and I held it shut, and he was kicking it. It was locked. And he was kicking it and kicking it and kicking it. And I was just in shock. I didn't know what the fuck was happening.
Yeah.
And I remember he kicked the door open, and I went flying against the wall, and I fell, and I pretended that I was knocked out because I was so scared. I remember just saying, like, in my head, at this
I'm
little,
dead.
I'm dead. Yeah. Just play dead.
Yeah.
And I played dead, and he looked down at me. He goes, I remember he just, don't fucking lock that. This is my fucking house. And he looked at me. He goes, get the fuck up. Stop playing.
Yeah.
I didn't hurt you. And I remember my mother screaming at him, and that was like the day everything changed.
Like that was the day your innocence was over.
It was done. That was the day that I learned that I was introduced to fear.
Yeah.
That was the day that I was introduced to anger.
Yeah.
And you know, that was the day that, you know, when being hurt started turning into rage. You know what I mean?
And how long did that go on for?
It went on until I was in, like, I think it was sixth grade. I remember.
She stayed with him that long?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know what the fuck happened. It was years of, I remember, you know, coming home late and getting punched or thrown down a flight of stairs. I remember second grade. Yeah, man. I remember second grade coming home being so happy I got Miss Julian for second grade.
Yeah.
Which I didn't even know what the fuck that meant. They just told you have Miss Julian next year. And I was like, yeah, skipping. I remember skipping.
Yeah.
I love skipping.
Yeah.
And I remember I got home a little late because I talked to this, one of the Porvecchio sisters, Rachel, who I was in love with.
Yeah. This is second grade.
Second grade, I fucking was in love with this girl. And I got home a little late, and then he had to do something, and I was late, and then he, you fucking late. And I remember screaming at me. And I remember he hit me in the back of the head, and then he like punched me, and I fell down the stairs. And nothing.
No apology, no nothing.
No, nothing no from help any. Out. Dude, I ran away, I think, that night. I remember running away, and I didn't know what running away was. I remember it was cold out, I left. I only went like five blocks, and I was at a red light crying. And I remember this girl saw me, and I'm a little kid, I'm a second grader.
Yeah.
Fucking crying at a red light, cold, with no jacket.
Yeah.
And I remember she was like, what's wrong? And I was like, you know, I'm running away, and I remember, you know, she walked me home. I remember that. She walked me back to my house.
Back to the bad place.
And my mother was there, and she was like crying, whatever. She was like, oh my God, and she brought me upstairs. And I remember she hugged me and loved me, and that's all I wanted. I remember she fucking held me, and I was like, oh my God, thank God. You know what I mean? And I remember I was underneath the coffee table in the living room, and I was just so happy.
Yeah.
Like I went from this tragic place and then she fucking gave me all this love. And then I remember I was just so happy because that's all I wanted.
Yeah.
And then I remember she was on the phone with a friend and she was talking. When I came home, oh, fuck, it killed me, man. When I came home, she was like, Bobby, what, you know, and she was like, I love you, Bobby. And I went, oh, Mom, I love you too. And we hugged.
Yeah.
And we had that moment. And then I remember I was under the coffee table. And I was so happy and feeling good, and he wasn't there. And she was on the phone, and she was talking to somebody, and she was like, and then he went, oh, Mom, I love you too. And she started laughing. And I fucking just crumbled.
Oh, my God.
I mean, looking back now, she didn't know I was there. She was probably telling her friend.
She probably thought it was cute. It wasn't an evil laugh.
It was just another.
Embarrassing.
It was just like, fucking you too, you fuck. You know, it was like. Yeah. And
you felt like you were belittled and made fun of. And like, yeah.
I felt it just killed me, dude. Yeah. It crushed me. And I remember.
And this is second grade.
Second grade. So then, you know, and then we moved again and slowly but surely.
What happened to your sister? Is she all right?
It fucking, you know, it's sad because she's not, you know, she used to call her fat and stupid and fat, you know, he hit me and he used to call her fat and stupid. And what it did between us, it separated us because we separated to survive.
Yeah.
And I remember if he was making fun of her, he wasn't making fun of me.
Right.
He would always go, come on, let's go take a ride.
Right.
And I was safe.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. Yeah. You know, so yeah. it separated us. She went and, you know, kind of went off in her old world and it still fucks her up.
Yeah.
But I love my sister, but we've been trying to reconnect.
Yeah.
Since then.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, we've been trying to reconnect, I think, since I got sober, which was like 30 years ago.
30 years already?
Yeah, I went, yeah. So we still try to talk. Like, my sister's, you know, she's got kidney disease. She got a kidney transplant 17 years ago. And she it's, you know, there's a limit on those.
Sure.
So she needs a new kidney again.
Yeah.
You know, she called me up the other day crying and, you know, it's like we're finally starting to connect, but there's still this survival.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, she's back in Boston, single. She has a beautiful kid that's all grown up now, and she's dealing with this kidney stuff, and it's like, I'm out here, and it's fucked up, man. It literally, this fuck.
It's, yeah, it's the pain of it, of, you know, seemingly unresolvable emotional, like, you know, pain, you know, that, how do you, like, because I deal with a little of this with the sort of like, you have these patterns, the shit was set, you know what I mean? The dynamic is set and you crave something more. You're at an age where you can handle something more, but you just don't know if you can fucking get there with the other person or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get that shit back.
No, you can't. And it's so funny too, is that someone just said to me, be as good as you can be with your kid right now. If there's something that you do that's stupid, stop doing it. If there's something you do that's fucked up, stop it.
So you think that about that all the time?
All the time, because when he's 16, you can't fix it. Yeah. It's there forever.
Yeah. Right.
It's just there.
Well, it sounds like when you're two, in second grade, it's there.
Fuck yeah, I remember all that shit. My mother, because my mother's Irish Catholic and I love her to death, but it's like, can't we just move on? Mom, I don't know how to fucking live life. So I don't know how to fight. Everything I've gotten is through pure willpower.
Right.
Pure fucking just, I'm not going to, it's all hustle.
Yeah. But she's still around?
My mother. Oh, yeah. That whole side of my family. She got remarried.
After Billy?
After Billy.
How long did it take to leave her after she fucked
five
up
years,
her kids?
5 years.
5 years of
five
destroying
years.
The child.
But here's the thing is, I don't think they knew back then. What they know now, I don't think they knew, because you think about her life, think about her childhood, 15 having a kid, you get sent away, you go to some nun place.
Did she?
Yeah.
Where were you then? Who got you?
I was 18 when she was 18, and she had to go away again, I think. With my sister, she had to go away, and I think with me, she actually moved in with my grandparents.
Right.
So
why were all these people living with your grandparents when they had jobs, like a cop and everything else?
No, that's who they were.
Okay.
Personality wise.
Oh, okay.
That's who they were. They all weren't right. That then.
Yeah.
They were just partying fucking teenagers, fucking psychopaths. But I'm saying like what they gave me.
Right.
That's
right.
Kind of what, you know, okay. if I was going to be a superhero.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's where I got all my powers.
Right,
those five
they're
guys.
They're just a house full of nuts.
Yeah. It's what they actually became in life too.
Yeah,
later
yeah.
in life.
Yeah.
If you look back, that's what they became.
Yeah. Right.
But,
right.
Yeah. It's I remember when I remember just being fucking scared all the time, dude. Scared of getting beat up, scared of getting killed. I remember scared of getting fucking killed.
But see, this thing is like, we do that thing. There's this thing we got to tell ourselves that, like, they didn't know better. But, you know, who the fuck doesn't know that the guy that you married shouldn't beat up your fucking kid for no reason?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm not trying.
She doesn't. No. Because she doesn't remember. She wasn't there for some of it. And I, you know, we
bring, they go with the blinders on. It's like the people with sexual abuse. They're like, yeah, they know, but they don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
can you empathize for that? I mean, can you? I mean, you know, you say you love your mother, but I just had this conversation right before you came over here. I did a therapy session. And like the only way, you know, and we're program guys. So like at some point you got to forgive them, right?
Yeah, because.
To really forgive them.
You have to forgive them because if not, you're just going to be in hatred forever.
And repeat it.
And I'm going to repeat it with my kid. That's my biggest fear. Like I have a temper, dude. The temper is from him. My temper, I'm like this fucking crazy sensitive pussy.
Yeah, you're a sweet guy.
But what happens is if I get hurt, I go immediately to anger.
Me too.
And that's fear. Anger is just hurt. That's all it is. You being hurt and it becomes anger because it's safer to flip the fuck out and scare people then away from you.
Than to be sad.
Yeah, because I don't want to hit anybody.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be hurt.
Yeah.
So I learned that. I remember the day I learned that is that when he hit me one time.
Yeah.
And I went and got a knife.
Yeah.
And I chased him. And he actually ran.
Yeah. How old were you?
I was in sixth grade.
Yeah.
And he ran. I remember he was running away from me for the first time.
Yeah.
And I chased him around the house with this knife. And then my mother grabbed me. She's like, Bobby, stop. And he was like, you little fucking psycho. You want to stab me? Go ahead. And he put his hand out.
Yeah.
And before I just went down. I was cutting his fucking hand off. Yeah. And he pulled back.
And he knew that you were.
And he was like, okay, this kid's fucking lost it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the last memory I have of this guy. I don't remember anything else from him. That was it. That was the last time. But in my brain, it clicked. I was like, oh, shit. If you hurt somebody physically or you flip out or you get angry and you scare them, they'll fucking leave.
So what ultimately happened to that guy and with your mother? Like, how did that end?
She divorced him. We moved into...
Like in a panic, like we're leaving the house today kind of shit?
No. I don't remember. I remember it was pretty quick. I remember it was pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's over, divorce. But I remember this scumbag, he had money. And I remember he came out... They were getting divorced. He came home one day with Atari when Atari first came out.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have Atari.
Yeah.
And he came home with Atari and he just hooked it up, started playing, had an extra joystick.
Yeah.
And I remember he came, hey, you want to play? And I was playing Adventure, you know, with the little dot that went around.
Yeah.
And we were all playing. And I remember, too bad you guys are leaving, you know? And I remember my mother came home. We were like, Ma, don't leave.
Yeah.
Maybe we should. And he got us. He hooked us. This fuck.
Just that easily.
Because all we want, me and my sisters wanted to fucking be loved.
Yeah, and play a game.
Yeah, and just be happy and shit.
Yeah.
And she comes home. She grabbed the Atari, fucking smashed it. Like, you fuck it. And she flipped out on him. And then I remember we were gone.
Yeah.
And then that's when she met this guy. She met this great guy who she's still married to today, Larry. And he was actually in a marriage, and my mother was in a marriage, and they worked at the same Grossman's Bargain Outlet.
Uh-huh.
Or Grossman's, whatever, which is a Home Depot back in the day. And I think they fooled around a little bit on each other's or something. I don't know. Or maybe it happened, and then after they did. So I remember he would come over, and he was the fucking greatest guy ever, dude. It was like living with Frank Sinatra.
And you believed it, though. It lasted. It stuck.
Well, I was already
a sham.
I was already gone, dude.
You were like,
I started drinking at 10.
Yeah.
I started drinking like whiskey.
At home?
No, I just was hanging out with this 30-year-old guy named Dickie.
Well, how does that happen?
I just met him through this girl, Patty.
At 10?
10. I remember 10. I was...
Do you have any questions about the 30-year-old who's hanging around with a 10-year-old, giving him whiskey?
No, he was a cool guy. I remember we went to his house. And I think his father was, they were hoarders or something. Yeah. I remember going to his house and it was just shit everywhere and it just smelled like shit.
Yeah.
And then we went in there and he had that dicky voice. You know?
Yeah.
I drank so much fucking, I remember drinking pints of 7-7 and just being by a barrel with him and Patty.
Who's Patty?
Patty's just this blonde chick that
was she?
She was probably 15.
Yeah.
She was 15. He was 30.
Yeah.
I was 10.
Drinking around a barrel.
He wanted to fuck Patty.
Yeah.
Patty fooled around with me, but Patty was dating this tough fucking 19-year-old.
But you were 10.
10.
She fooled around with you at 10.
Yeah, we kissed.
Right.
We kissed, yeah. We kissed.
This is not a healthy environment for by any stretch of the imagination.
I had nowhere to go, man.
I'm not judging you. I'm just saying that that how these people all found each other. Who the fuck knows?
Well, if you think of it, it was like
this was in Medford.
Well, we had moved out of the house. No more toy box. No more room. We moved into a two bedroom. My mother slept on the living room floor now because we don't have any more money.
Yeah,
because Billy's gone.
Right.
So we live in this shit apartment.
But you got the guy who works at Grossman's.
Well, he starts coming over, but it was almost like a year they started hooking up.
Yeah.
And in that year, I started drinking. I started doing some drugs. And I started hanging out with these people.
Just like on the corner shit, in a way.
Yeah, it was like, they became, like they gave
Were they in the complex?
No, it wasn't a con. It was like, you know, it was Medford. So it was like, you know, fucking blue collar town shit. And
yeah,
I hung out with this kid, Dickie and Scott. Yeah. And they drank and I just started drinking. And I remember I hated drinking. I just did it because they did it. And I didn't want to, I was alone. I was fucking alone a lot. For around 3 months when we moved.
Yeah.
I had no friends.
Yeah.
I didn't have one person in my life. Yeah. I would wake up. I remember I would wake up in the morning and go in the basement. We had this fucking dusty old basement. And there was three families living in this home. And I would go in the basement and I built this little bedroom on the floor with a blanket, a pillow. And I remember I would go down there and I would bring my lunch. I would go out the front door. All right, I'm going to school, sixth grade. And then go around the back and go in the basement and just curl up in a ball and sleep all day. Until around 2 o'clock, 2:15, and then I'd come home.
Right.
I'd just come out the back door and and just be like, hey.
Oh, so sad.
It was fucking pretty. I remember being there and just lying there all day on the ground. And, you know, the sun was coming through and just sitting there and just fucking being sad.
Well, it was all beating at you and, like, you know, all this fucking change and weirdness and you're drinking, you can't relate to other kids and shit.
Well that's what happened. It was 3 months of that, you know, just being sad and lonely. And then I met these people,
Dickie and Patty,
Dickie, and then Scott and Dickie Sewell, and all of a sudden these guys wanted to be with me every day. They would come to my house, my doorbell rang, and they became my family. That became my father
10?
figure. Dickie and Scott. The little Dickie. There was Big Dickie and Little Dickie.
Little Dickie was age appropriate?
Age appropriate.
And yeah. Big Dickie was the leader?
Big Dickie was a separate guy.
Right.
Yeah, I started hanging out with the regular age appropriate Dickie.
Little Dickie.
Yeah, Little Dickie and Scott Kelly.
Yeah.
We started hanging out and then I left Big Dickie and Patty.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
But you're all drinking now.
We were drinking a lot, man. We would drink every day. Every fucking day, we would try to get booze.
Did it make you feel better?
The drinking didn't. The actual friendship did.
Right.
Yeah, the actual somebody fucking having my back did. You know, somebody, actually wanting to be around me did.
So what the fuck happens? So you're 10 years old, you're already drinking every day. And so you get sober at 15. Is that what you say?
Yeah, I went to, I kind of always upped my friends.
Right.
So it's like kind of like this business. You keep up in your coattails.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you make more famous friends and all of a sudden you're hanging out with fucking the holy grail of famous people. And you're like, oh my God, you know?
Yeah.
I think that happens in friendships too. Like when you're younger, it's like.
For different reasons.
Well,
the holy grail is not that holy.
Well, my goal was to hang out with the toughest, meanest guys.
Yeah.
Because that was the safest place for me to be.
Right.
So when I got an opportunity to hang out with this other group of guys from South Medford or whatever, I remember, it was so funny that it was Frankie Policastro.
Yeah.
It was like the Fonz.
Yeah.
I was just the coolest fucking kid.
How old are you now, 12?
I'm around 12 going on 13. Yeah. And I meet Frankie.
Yeah.
And he's got blonde hair, Italian guy, leather jacket, wife beater, smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
And then I met Jake Gagliardi, fucking coolest motherfucker ever. He's from the Italian family. His big older brother, two older brothers were just fucking, just gorgeous human beings.
Yeah.
Like that Italian, holy shit, gorgeous men, you know?
Yeah.
And then I met Mikey Dots and Mikey O.
Yeah.
And it was like out of a movie, dude. It was like being in a Michael Mann film or some shit, you know?
Yeah.
And here I am, they took me in.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, come on, I would hang out with these guys.
You got no dad. That adds to all this. You need these role models, right?
Well, at this time, she's seeing Larry.
But so you like Larry. But still, in terms
of... I'm done. I'm gone.
Right. In terms of real guidance and shit, those days are over.
I think if Larry was my father, and I've said this to him before, I would say he is my dad.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But if he was my father from when I was a kid,
you'd be bad.
I wouldn't be here. I would have some fucking great little job back in Boston.
Yeah.
I'd have a triple decker. My sister would live on one of the fucking apartments.
Yeah.
I'd have an above ground pool.
Right.
We'd have parties and barbecues.
Yeah.
We'd probably go to the Cape in the summer.
Right.
Oh yeah. My life would be fucking, I would not be here. Yeah. I wouldn't fucking have anything to do with this shit business at all. Not fucking one bit.
God, it's just bad timing. Larry had bad timing.
I remember when he came over one night, right when I started hanging out with Dickie and Scott and I started drinking and I started getting into it. I remember I'm with him and he's teaching me how to make chicken soup.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting there in the kitchen.
What, boiling the chicken?
You cook the chicken and the vegetables and you boil the stock and then you put the vegetables and then you put the chicken, you let it simmer. And I remember we spent like hours making this and Frank Sinatra's on and he's teaching me about all this old music. And I was like, this is it. Yeah. This is I've been waiting for this guy.
Yeah.
And then the doorbell rings and it's Dickie and Scott.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's go. And I was like, I didn't want to. I really didn't, man. I was like, I don't want to. I want to stay with this guy.
Yeah.
I want to eat chicken soup. We just spent 3 hours making this soup.
Yeah.
And Dickie's like, I know where they want to go. They want to go to the tracks and go get into trouble and drink and fucking be idiots.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you guys want some soup? And they were like, yeah. I was like, really? And they're like, yeah, all right. And Larry was like, come on in, guys. Let's have some soup.
Right.
And he brought him in and he gave us all soup. I remember we're sitting there in the kitchen eating soup and Larry's talking to these kids. He's like, so where are you guys from? And, you know, oh, that's great.
Be a nice guy,
It was great. And then we were like, all right, let's go. And we left. And then we drank a bottle of whiskey and we all threw up the soup. Remember, we're just on the track going, projectile vomiting, fucking the best chicken soup I've ever had. It was just fucking everywhere.
That was the battle, right? You know, like that was, you know, sort of like, it's interesting though, that the pressure of that like, you know, that this is a safer place. It's a better place. There's more to be gained. It's a healthier place. But you got these monsters with the fucking, all of you have these little monster hearts that are full of anger and sadness. And that's the pull. Like, you don't want to be uncool.
Well, if I say no to them.
Who you got?
What if he goes?
Yeah.
What if Larry goes?
Right. And Larry's not, you know, and also like, you know, he's still an older guy. He's still like a grown up. You know, you still want to be a kid, right?
Yeah. I want to be a kid. I want friends, but I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. I don't know. What's the right thing?
So when
no one ever fucking taught me.
I know.
No one ever said.
This is how you live.
Go with your instincts.
Right.
You know what? It's okay to fail. No one ever said, do what you want to do. I mean, I don't know what to do. It's like, I don't want them not to like me, but I don't want Larry not to like me. I don't want nobody not to like me because if people don't like you, if people don't like you, then you feel like shit.
Right.
But if everybody likes you, even if it's fake, even if it's fucking a sham, right?
Yeah.
You can feel good. You can at least not think about them.
Hence stand up.
Yes. That one twat in the front who doesn't laugh. And it's like, why? 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 Everybody else is fucking finding me amusing.
Yeah.
But you don't like me.
Well, you know what? Sometimes I've found they're just sort of like, they're sitting there going like, oh, Christ, did I leave the toaster on? Oh, he's got nothing to fucking do with you.
Oh, dude, I yelled at a lady one time in the crowd. She was on her phone and I screamed at her. I go, you know what? Fuck you. I'm fucking up here. Everybody's having a good time. You're on your fucking dumb phone.
Yeah.
And she goes, Bobby, I love you. It's just my daughter got into an accident. And I was like, oh, God. The whole crowd, just shut down. The fucking oxygen left the room. And I went, is she okay? She's like, I don't know. She starts crying. Oh, no. And I'm like, oh, my God. Now I got to go back into some fucking.
How far are we into the shit? How far are we?
Dude, I was probably 30 minutes into my show. I had a half hour left.
Yeah.
And it was just no recovery. She's just crying. And I was almost crying. I was like, you should, you know.
Did she go?
She had to go, and she left, and she wound up being okay.
Yeah.
And then she came back in. I was like, you know, now it's like she was just sitting there, and her eyes were still red.
Yeah.
From crying.
But she found out that she was okay?
The daughter was all right, yeah. She was all right.
It's one of those great moments as a comic where you learn something. You're not sure what, but, you know, it's not necessarily going to stop you from saying, what are you on your fucking phone for, you know?
Yeah.
For whatever reason, like, I didn't know you when you started, really. Like, when we started to sort of connect, like, at the Cellar or whatever, you always saw right through me, and there was a sensitivity. I always felt like crying every time I saw you. Because, like, I'd be like, you'd just look at me and go, like, what? What's going on? What? What's the matter? What do you like? Because I knew you knew the score, and there was some sort of connection.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, I knew you were a very sensitive guy, and that, you know, that it was, I was always just shy of, like, losing my shit around you, just emotionally.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was. Do you know what that is?
Well, I don't know.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do, because I've always liked you.
Yeah.
Like, even when people were like, fuck Marc Maron.
Right.
What a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I like him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like I said, I would see you there.
Right. You know when sensitive people, that's the weird thing is like, because I'm like that. I don't know if you're like that. You seem a little more magnanimous than me. Like, there's not a lot of people that think you're an asshole.
Right.
But for me, like, I did have a sort of disposition, but you would see right through it anyways. You're just one of those guys.
I knew you were always a really sweet guy.
Yeah,
I just knew you were a nice guy. And that's why I go to see you at the ice cream of being sad and fucked up and all that shit that happened to you. That's what drew me to you, because I said, oh, good, man, you're fucked up, and I'm fucked up too right now.
Yeah.
Well, not right now. I'm okay now, but I've been where you're at a lot, you know?
Yeah.
But sometimes I think, dude, like, I think of you having, like, I don't have that reputation, but maybe I should.
Right.
No, maybe I should be more of a dick. Maybe I should be more of, like, is that me being just fucking, I don't have what the fuck am I doing that more people don't hate me?
No, I don't think that's true. I don't even think for me it was opinions. It was really just fear and defensiveness and assuming. Yeah, I was always preemptively hostile because I always thought, you know what I mean? Like, everybody was, you know, kind of judging me. Like, I was paranoid a little bit and really kind of hypersensitive. We just did a different thing with it. I wanted to keep people out. You wanted to let people in.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just, like, I'm still have a hard time with that, accepting love or wanting to be liked. Like, because you think as a comic, all we want to do is be liked, but I fight that. I literally, like, that's the challenge.
Why do you fight it?
Because I'm afraid that, like, if I open up like that I'm just going to fucking disappear. It's a weird thing.
Yeah. I'm afraid that every time I do it, every single person I've ever allowed in my life has left me. Every person that I was fucking ultimately close with.
Yeah.
Has left me.
Yeah.
Especially male figures.
Yeah.
The only person that's ever stayed with me is my wife, through thick and thin. You know, there's a couple other, I have like a few friends in comedy and outside of comedy, like, but everybody
else. There's a group of guys that like would never fucking leave you. There's a core group of dudes that, it's very funny about that whole Cellar crew, you know, like when I, you know, even when I go back, yeah. You know, I feel like a closeness. Like, you know, it's not like everyone's in touch every day, but I bet you most of those guys, you know, they're like Colin or Jimmy or those guys, right?
I talk to Colin pretty much every day.
Right. Like, you know, you know, they would show up for you no matter what.
I think so. I think Keith and Colin.
Keith. Oh, yeah.
But here's the problem.
Yeah.
And I got to find some way. And I hope, I know it's through my kid or my family. Mm. That I've created, because now my therapist is like, you know, one day he's like, stop bitching about your dad. He's like, you're never getting one.
Which one? Oh,
he goes, you're never getting a dad.
Yeah.
That you're never getting one.
Yeah.
The opportunity's gone. It's never going to happen. Stop
looking for it.
It's
harsh, but true.
He goes, you're the dad.
Right.
So just be the fucking dad.
And also do it to yourself too. Parent yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is, I'm just fucking learning that. Parent your fucking self.
Yeah.
How do you fucking do that? Like, how do you, and it's like, you're never going to get the friendship. I've never gotten the friendship that I wanted. You never get the friendship 100% that you want.
That's why I liked you. That's why we're connected. Because And I used to do this. Like, there was one moment in my life. You know Chuck Sklar?
Yeah.
So we started together, right? And Chuck's like the most kind of like, you know, kind of like hyperly, you know, kind of rigidy, kind of, you know, not the most emotional guy, yeah. You know what I mean? But I decided that he was my friend, you know, at some point when we were starting out, like Catch a Rising Star days. And I just like, but when I got a friend, when I decide you're my friend, that's a burden. I'm a lot to handle. You know what I mean? Like, I got a lot of expectations, a lot of needs. Right, yeah. Right. So one time I just lost my shit on Chuck, who's just emotionally myopic. It's one frequency, and I'm like, "You're not a fucking friend." He literally says, "He says you have a very expansive personality," and I thought it was a very nice way of sort of encapsulating that. Like, you know, when I commit to a friendship, yeah. I'm like, "You got to be my dad. You got to be my friend. You got to be there." And it's exhausting. How are you going to keep a friend like that?
It's fine. You know what? You what? Say that. I've never put it into words, but it is true.
Yeah.
If you're my friend, you have to be a lot of shit.
Yeah. And you're a lot to handle.
And you have to have Navy SEAL loyalty.
Right.
It has to be military grade loyalty to me. You know what I mean? And if you fail at that whatsoever.
Fuck you.
You don't give a fuck. Right. If there's a few days.
Then they get that part of you.
Yeah.
And they don't even know what you're talking about.
Yes.
Because they're just normal people.
Yeah.
3 days, you know, you don't talk to some guy for 3 days. You're like, what the fuck? And he's like, what are you talking about?
Like, and then you're like, oh, nothing. You cool? You still love me? It's like, fuck.
It took me a long time to get that.
I'm starting to figure it out. But I don't know. Is it ever, I don't know how to get rid of it. Dude, I've done fucking, you know, meditation. I've pray. I don't know what the fuck it is. I just don't know if I'm fixable. I just want somebody to go, come here.
Yeah.
I just want a sensei.
Yeah.
You know when you see these kung fu movies or these karate movies where this guy grabs somebody and just goes, you know, wax on, wax off.
Yeah.
I just want somebody to teach me how to fucking wax on and wax off.
Yeah.
I just want a fucking sensei to teach me how to be a fucking, like a professional adult, you know? Just to be able to handle shit. And because I try to teach myself, but I always fail. That's the one thing, too, is that you look at how the fuck could I be sad? Because I'm touring. I'm making good money as a comic.
You're funny as fuck, too. Like, that's the other thing that we neglect to say. I mean, it's pretty apparent if people are listening that don't know you is that, you know, you're very honest, very fucking real. You can't help but be yourself, and you're not afraid to say anything, and it's great. There's so few comics that do that anymore.
Do you ever think sometimes, like, if you were emotionally disconnected and more focused just on being famous or successful, that's how it's done?
I don't know.
Like, if you weren't in tune to your emotions as much,
I know, but I can't separate my creativity from, that's where it all comes from. There's nothing I can do about that. There's like, it's no way, like, here's how I do it. It's sort of like, I should really write better jokes. And I'm like, I've never really written a joke in my fucking life. Like, you know, you see these guys that they sit there, they write, they organize, they structure. Like, Seinfeld to me is from Mars. Like, I don't know where the fuck that guy's coming from emotionally. I don't know where he's coming from comedically. I know he works very hard, but that's another fucking planet, man.
But dude, that's so funny that you say that because I've had people say, dude, you got like Seinfeld, you got to get up and it's a job, right? 6 hours a day.
I do the job.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's more taxing on me because every time I get up there, it's life or death. It's not like if this doesn't go well, I'm not going to be okay for a while.
Yeah.
I don't walk out going like, that was an okay set. Tomorrow's another night. No, fuck that. I go like, why do I do this? I'm terrible. I'm a piece of shit. I don't work hard enough and I'm fucked.
Yeah.
I'm fucked for days.
Yeah.
So am I doing it wrong? I don't think so.
I guess it's just the way you do it, I guess.
But you know, there are guys, like, at some point you've got to be like, you know, what's the risk of that? The risk is, like, not everyone's going to like me because I'm too fucking raw, you know, and I'm too, like, you know, whatever it is. And it took me a long time to accept that, and I don't think I would have had I not somehow built a small following for myself through the podcast and other things where, like, I'm not fucking Kevin Hart, I'm not Louis, but I got a few thousand people like me.
Yeah, but I'm not even you.
I know, but you will.
I'm not even fucking, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I look at this 25 years in, right? And I'm doing great, you know, quote unquote. I got a show. I'm funny, blah, blah, blah.
You're closer
blah.
To me than you are to Louis.
I'm yeah, but it's like I still go on the road and fucking, there's a bunch of comped seats and,
yeah.
You know, I'm still.
That would happen to me if I did comedy clubs, I bet.
But it's just, it's like I still have to do Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
All right.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
It's like, when is there going to be a day where you can sell out or you can just do your comedy? Like these guys who just.
For people that like you, but would you like that? You want the whole room to know you and like you?
I would, dude. I don't know if there's any better feeling than performing in front of your fans.
Yeah. No,
I mean,
there isn't.
You have to know that. When they show up to see you, they fucking love you.
It's great.
When you show up at a club and there's 30 people that are there for you, and the rest, the 120.
You got free tickets.
You got free tickets. and some type of fucking coconut shrimp coupon.
I'll tell you. I'd rather just the 30 people and then 10 people that pay. Like, I hate free tickets.
Yeah, but I can't. I have a fucking kid.
No, I know.
I got a fucking, you know, it's like that was fucking great when I was just a single guy. But now it's like I have a fucking kid that I have to, like, that whole other fucking aspect of it now. It's like, I don't know, dude. Everybody, I hate that, dude. I hate the fucking, why don't you have that?
Dude, I'm still very specifically famous. Like, you know, like you, at some point, you know, you've got to like sort of like contextualize, you know, your success. You know, like, does that make sense? Maybe not. Let me try to put it a different way. Is that like, there's a lot of people don't know who the fuck I am. You know, my show's on IFC. My podcast is a podcast.
Yeah, that fucking President Obama came on.
Yeah, I know, dude. But that doesn't.
I mean, but you found it, dude. You found your thing.
Right.
You got it.
I know. That was lucky, cosmic timing.
But it,
I earned it. But it was
you
lucky.
Earned it, and you found it, and you did the work for it, and you went through it, and it's like, am I not doing? Am I just? You know what I mean, dude?
You're doing
like,
fine. Did you get your health insurance from doing the show?
Yeah.
Okay. Shut the fuck up.
It still doesn't. It does nothing. It does nothing. Yeah, that didn't work. That did not work. Sorry. No, it almost worked. For a fucking second, I was like, it was almost like, wow.
Yeah.
But no, it didn't. I'm still where I was before you said that. I'm still petrified.
I know.
I'm petrified of being 55.
I know.
Having to work in some fucking one nighter in Poughkeepsie.
That was my biggest fear when I was in the garage not knowing what the fuck to do with my life after Misha left me.
Yeah.
That was my biggest fear. And like, I'm so grateful that things worked out, but that was the biggest fear.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm telling you. You're working.
Yes.
You and people know you.
Yes.
And you're on a fucking big network show.
Yes.
You have great friends. You have creative friends.
Yes.
You're thought of as an actor. You do a great job as an actor. You do a great job as a comic. You know, just fucking at least, you know that.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe the key to it is enjoying that and not worrying about.
It's hard though.
Worrying about where you're going.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, like the program, one day at a time. Maybe it's just that, but it's hard to.
How
do
is
that.
Your program?
It's not that. It's good, you know, but it's not as good as it could be. You know.
Let's go back though. So you got sober at 15. Did you? Why? Because you went to jail. What the hell happened?
Yeah, I went to jail.
Oh, you did.
I went to jail at 13 for unarmed robbery and assault and battery.
Did you do it?
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I ripped off a mafia-owned pizza store.
What?
Yeah, I was drunk. I was fucking shit-faced. Me and Frankie went in. And he went in, and I was trying to pick up the chick. This chick who worked there was in my geography class. Big-nosed Italian girl. I was in love with her. And we just took the money out of the register and ran out.
You had a gun, though?
No, we just fucking threatened them. What's his name? Frankie threatened the cook.
Mm-hmm.
That he was going to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
I guess he beat him up a week before and went back in and threatened him again.
Oh.
And we took the money. We just took it and ran.
Yeah.
And then I had the mob after me, and I got arrested. Went to juvenile jail for a while, like 6 months at 13.
Yeah.
I remember that. That was fucking shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty fucked up. But just because I remember when my bail was $10 and my mother wouldn't pay it.
To go learn a lesson?
Yeah, well, she was told not to pay it.
By who?
by the judge.
Oh, because he wanted to, like...
He said, let him go through the system.
Yeah.
Because he's never going to change.
Really?
So she
believed
did.
Him. Just she believed him. Believes yeah. any shitty guy that tells her something.
Well, it actually worked. I was the only one out of all my friends who kind of got sober in his life together.
Oh, yeah?
All those guys.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, because I went... I remember they took me away, and I remember... this is weird. I still sucked my fingers.
Yeah.
I still...
In juvie?
Yeah, well, the last time I would suck my fingers and pick my nose.
Yeah.
With my pinky finger.
Yeah.
It was just my, instead of sucking my thumb,
yeah.
I would suck my fingers, my two fingers.
Yeah.
And I remember that was the last, that night in juvie jail was the last time I ever did it. I was so afraid of falling asleep.
Yeah.
With your sucking fingers my in your fingers. Mouth? I was 13. And I remember I was like, I can't do it. And I stayed up. I kept waking myself up
because make
I,
sure
I just want to wake up and just catch a beating because I was sitting there sucking my fingers and picking my nose. So I was fucking paranoid. So yeah. I remember that was the last time I ever did that. And then they took me into this place. I remember I went into this room and it was the first time I was around Puerto Ricans and black dudes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, rough. It was just, I was the only white kid in there. And, we sitting in this room watching cartoons on this big fucking TV up at Danvers State Hospital.
Yeah.
Remember the mental institution?
Kinda.
Up, they had this mental institution, but they had this little side building that they gave to the state for juvies.
Yeah.
And you'd go there after court.
Yeah.
And you'd sit there, wait to see where you're going.
Yeah.
And I remember they brought in subs, all these subs, and there was an Italian sub and they had these wet onions on top. And all the kids took the onions and threw them on the ceiling. And I looked up on the ceiling. It was like years of onions.
That was what people did.
That's just what they did.
Yeah.
Just years of onions just dried on this fucking ceiling.
Yeah.
It was the fucking grossest shit. So I just took my onions and threw them up on the fucking thing. And, and then I was in the system. I remember going to jail and being in this fucking crazy shit and then going into a foster home for the next 3 years.
Did you fight in jail?
I didn't fight. I was funny. That's where I learned to be funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I actually learned to be funny. I remember one night they were coming in, they were beating up, there was three white kids.
Yeah.
And they beat up one kid at the playing basketball. They just threw basketballs at his face. And then they came in to get the other kid. They beat him up in the shower. And then I was sitting in my room and they all came in, all these black dudes, little tiny dude.
Yeah.
They called him the Godfather.
Yeah.
Little squeaky voice.
Yeah.
And they came in and they sat all around me on my bed and ignored me like I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And they were like, these motherfucking white boys, blah, blah, blah. They're talking shit about white dudes.
Yeah.
They were like, yo, you, what's up, man? You a homeboy? You a white boy?
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm a homeboy, motherfucker. And they were like, oh, this fucking kid's crazy. And they just started laughing. They were like, you all right, motherfucker? I'm like, you all right too, motherfucker? And they were like, all right, chill out.
Enough.
Yeah, that's where I learned to be funny.
Yeah.
Is in jail.
Your life depended on it.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was either that or fight. I mean, I learned how to fight too.
I was the same way. You know, for being as big of a dick as I was, it's amazing I haven't gotten my ass kicked, but I never did.
Ever?
Nope. Are you going to do it?
No,
okay.
I would never do that. Okay. I love you. I never do it. That's the one thing about you. I remember when you would come to the cellar, you would sit in the bottom and just, like me and Godfrey were so loud.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember because I used to sweat.
Yeah, yeah,
Godfrey was on stage or I'd be on stage and you'd be there. Why do you gotta fucking yell? Why do you guys gotta scream? Yeah. Why, I mean, can't you just, because you had to go up after.
I know, yeah.
And I would be like, Mark, it's okay.
Yeah.
I go, Mark, you're fucking hilarious. You're going to just do just fine. It has nothing. And you were like, really? Yeah. Is it good? Are you sure? Yeah. I'm like, Mark, you're fucking, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you'd come off, you'd be like, yeah, it was good.
Yeah,
it was good.
I just thought like, you know, yeah, you're just ruining everything.
Yeah, it was, juvie was fucking crazy. Foster homes were worse than juvie though.
Yeah, but now you're like 14, 15?
Yeah, I was.
And you can't go back to your mom's place?
No, you would go to jail for a few months, and then you would go to a foster home for a few months, and then you'd work your way back to. And I went back eventually to my mom's, and then you get arrested.
Yeah,
when you're a ward of the state. So when you're a ward of the state, they own you.
Yeah.
So there's no more court.
Yeah.
So you just do you get a, you do something bad, you go right to juvie jail.
Yeah.
There's no more of that shit.
Right.
It just saves money and time.
Right.
So that's what kept happening. Just, anytime I did something, I would just go directly to jail.
Yeah.
And that's what happened over the next 3 years. I just kept going to jail. And the last time I went to jail was I was living in New York, upstate New York, near Rochester. I was working on a farm.
Court-ordered?
Yeah, court-ordered on a farm 5 days a week. Yeah. I was a farmhand.
Yeah.
And I fucking fell in love with it.
Yeah.
I worked with animals and fucking all this crazy shit and kind of got my shit together a little bit, but I was still hanging out with the fucking, that was my MO. Anytime I went to seven different high schools, six different-
You find the fucking bad kids?
I would always, anytime we moved, I would have a thing of weed and I'd find the fuck, I would do something fucked up to go to detention, first day, second day. You know, tell
so everyone knew you.
So then I would be in detention, and whoever was in detention with me, those are my new friends. So I'd be like, dude, you want to smoke some weed? Yeah. And we'd go smoke weed after detention, and that would be my group.
Yeah.
And I would just hang out with those fucking guys. And that's what I did up there. Same shit.
But also work with animals.
But I started working on the farm, and the responsibility of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, coming home and being so exhausted and fucking just smelling like fucking shit.
Yeah.
Animal shit.
Yeah.
I had this responsibility for the first time in my life. And I actually started getting self-esteem.
Yeah.
And my mom and stepdad, Larry, we were connecting on some level. Because now
Before they couldn't really have you around.
No, because I was just a fucking punk.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, but I was still, you know, drinking on the side.
Yeah.
And partying on weekends and stuff. And I got arrested again and that was it. And then I just fucking, I went, they flew me back to Boston on a plane. I mean, that's when you could smoke on planes too.
Right.
I remember being 15, smoking on a plane.
Yeah, me too.
That was the greatest shit ever.
In those back four rows. How the fuck was that even possible? How did the whole plane not smell like fucking cigarettes?
It did, but how do you fucking, imagine looking at a 15-year-old lighting up a Marlboro on a plane.
I know, I smoked at that age too and no one fucking did shit.
Nothing.
They would have smoked in our high school. They couldn't stop it. There's 3,000 kids there.
I remember flying back, I asked the flight attendant for a light.
Yeah.
15-year-old on the plane.
Yeah.
And then she loved me. They were great to me the whole flight. And we got to Boston. There was two state troopers waiting for me at the thing, and I just turned around and they handcuffed me. I was like, bye, ladies. They were like, what the fuck is that? And then I went right to fucking jail, and then I went to rehab for a year.
Holy shit.
A whole year I didn't see anybody. All male rehab. That's changed my life. The guy, Tom Tompkins, who ran this fucking thing, was one of the greatest men I've ever met in my life.
Is he alive still?
He died while I was in there, which fucking killed me. That's another thing with these fucking men. Here it is. I met the guy. This guy was in show business in a weird way, like old show business.
Yeah.
His wife was a famous opera singer or some shit, and his world fell apart through booze, and he opened this thing up to get kids, to save kids.
Oh, it was his place?
It was his place.
Wow.
And I remember
How'd he die?
Fucking heart attack, man.
Oh, God, I'm so scared of that.
He was like 70 or something, and he used to smoke those Misty cigarettes.
Yeah.
Like 9 packs a day.
The thin ones?
The thin ones.
Yeah.
And he would just smoke all day. The first time I met him, I was on the first day there, and this kid was like, I want the fuck up. Fuck this place. And all the staff were there, and he comes down the stairs, this old guy with a fucking weird beard, and he had psoriasis, and just looked like shit.
Yeah.
Looks like he just got off an island.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he came down and he goes, what fuckhead wants to leave?
Yeah.
And everybody was like, what? I was like, what the f-? And he started yelling at this kid, you fucking dumb cunt. You want to fucking leave, you stupid cunt? Then get the fuck out of here. Fuck you, you fucking pussy. I go, we're trying to save your life. We're trying to fucking save your fucking life. And you want to be a fucking pussy, you dumb cunt? And I remember this new employee was like, excuse me, but I don't think he goes, fuck you, you're fired. Get the fuck out. Fired the guy. And then the kid starts crying. He goes, yeah, you're fucking sad, aren't you? It's scary, isn't it? Yeah. This is life or death, you fucking asshole. We're trying to save you. Do you want to be saved? And he was like, yeah. He was like, all right, then shut the fuck up. And he walked over and he goes, look at me. And he gave the kid a hug.
Yeah.
And the kid just lost it. Lost it. And I remember I was like, what the fuck is that? And he goes, where's Kelly? And I raised my hand. He goes, upstairs. I was so scared. And I went to his office. And he was like, he was the sweetest guy. He's like switched. He was like, all right, so How you liking it the first day? I was like, I don't know. And then he goes, I want you to tell me what's your baggage? I go, oh, I had a father. But you go, no. He goes, what's the thing you've never fucking told anybody?
Yeah.
What is it? What's the thing you've never told? What do you fucking walk around with?
Yeah.
And I go, he goes, what? I want to know the thing you never fucking told a soul that haunts you, that you feel shitty about. And I was like, well, one time I jerked off my friend. And I feel really fucked up about that because I'm not gay, but I feel like I'm, you know, I didn't. He goes, what? I go, he goes, whatever his name was, Glenn, go get fucking Michael, Sean, and get Miguel up here right now. And he brings these three kids. I'm like, whoa. brings these three kids up. Now there's these three kids. He goes, hey, you. Did you ever jerk off one of your friends? Yeah, apps, yeah. You have a jerk? Yeah. You have a jerk? Yeah. He goes, everybody does that, you fucking dummy. Part of sexuality. You're not gay. You're just a little kid that was exploring sex. And I was like, I'm not? He goes, no, everybody. I was like, really? They were like, yeah, I fucking jerked my friend off. I was like, get the fuck out. I was like, oh my God. Like, it was gone. It was fucking gone forever. The thing that I walked around with for all these years where I'm like, that this dark secret, and it was like gone in 2 seconds because these other three kids.
Yeah.
And he was telling me, yeah, dude, you know, you're just exploring. You don't know what's sad. Nobody taught you. Nobody fucking sat you down and told you what your penis did and how, and all of a sudden you go through puberty and blah, blah, blah. And then he just, from there, the sweetest guy ever in my life. Did this guy, he used to bring me and a couple of the kids over his house. I always thought he was going to try to fuck me.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I always thought there was going to be that moment where he's going to go, "All right, let me see your cock."
Yeah.
And I'm going to show you how to jerk a guy off. I always thought there was going to be that moment.
Yeah.
Because he would bring us over his house and we'd put furniture together.
Yeah.
Like IKEA shit. Yeah. He had like he loved records and stereos. Right?
Yeah.
And we would put the stuff together, and he'd make us those pizzas.
Yeah.
Those French bread pizzas.
Yeah.
And little French cakes. He'd have these little cakes, and he'd feed us. He was like a grandmother.
Yeah.
And he was like the greatest guy I've ever met, and he changed my life, and I wanted to be a better person, and then he fucking died. Just one day, they came in, and they said, Tom's passed, and he was never in my life again. And then the guy that took over was just a fucking dildo.
Yeah.
And then I left a couple months later, and you know.
Well, you got enough of that guy.
I got around.
He planted it.
I got around 9 months of
him. Yeah.
Of this amazing fucking human being.
Yeah.
That actually gave me these moments of hope, and and he took away a lot of my fucked up shit. This he took away a lot of my baggage.
Mm-hmm.
At that, but he also, you know, he was that guy that I was, that man that I was looking for. I wish, you know, like I said before, it's like I've had these amazing men in my life. I've had probably around 12 fathers. Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? Probably around 10 dads.
Right.
These amazing, you know.
I did the same thing because my dad was like sort of abusive and fucked up and absent. That like there's a lot of guys in my life, some of them better than others.
Yeah.
Some of them that were frankly dangerous, that did me no good. But knowing that's why I gravitated towards them, I'm able to find something good about all of them, really.
Yeah.
So you get out of this place and you're going to meetings and you're doing the thing.
Well, I went to, you know, you get out of that place and it's almost you're institutionalized.
Yeah.
And I was like, I thought I was going to die. I swear to God, I was like, I'm going to die. I'm not going to make it. And I just went to a meeting.
Yeah.
I went to a fucking meeting. And I remember I asked the guy told me when I left rehab, go to a meeting that's far away from your house so you can't get a ride home. You can't walk.
Right.
You have to ask somebody for a ride or you're going to be fucked.
Right.
So I found this meeting way the fuck out and I got dropped off. I remember Larry dropped me off.
Yeah.
And he goes, you sure you don't need a ride? I go, nope. And he left.
And you're like, what, 16?
I was 16.
Yeah.
And I went to the meeting and I sat by the door panicking.
Yeah.
And I saw a guy that I met at a meeting while I was in rehab. And I go, hey, can you give me a ride home? And he went, no. I still hate that fuck. I was so like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then I panicked. I'm like, and then all of a sudden this guy comes in, long hair, fucking rocker.
Yeah.
And I go, hey, can you give me a ride home? And he looked at me, he goes, fuck yeah. And he goes over to the piano, and there was a piano in this fucking room, and he starts playing, and all these chicks, these, you know, rehab chicks come over. And
yeah.
And then we hung out until 2 a.m. at a Bickford's.
Yeah.
Talking sobriety and programming.
It's the best part about fucking early sobriety. It's just like fucking smoking, talking, drinking coffee with whoever, and you know the language, and they're fucking, you know, there's a context to the conversation. It's not weird.
No.
You
know, it's the best part, and you're constantly being grateful.
Mm-hmm.
You're constantly, you know, I just remember just talking about every fucking day.
And there's no shortage of fucked up grown-ups to fucking talk to you all night.
I remember first time I ever saw stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Bob Keane. And I remember I was
Little Bob Keane.
Little Bob Keane.
Yeah.
I remember I was so excited to fucking go to this. First row, I fucking got. And I remember the guy, not Bob, the other guy, whoever he was.
Yeah.
He fucking, I was laughing. And then I looked at him and I reached up and he touched my hand.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he touched me.
Yeah.
And I remember I was so, that comedy that night.
It, that was like, it?
It took me out of that. Dude, I was going to kill myself. I mean, I just remember loving it. Loving stand-up comedy. That was my first time. And then I would go sneak in and see Sweeney.
At Nick's?
I remember I saw Gavin on stage hosting.
At Nick's?
At Nick's.
The original Nick's.
The original Nick's upstairs. Yeah, sold out.
Yeah, that's great.
Gavin's on stage hosting.
Gavin, talking fast.
He brings up Steve Sweeney together.
Yeah. The two of them are up
there? The two of them are up there. And I've never seen anything that funny in my life. And then I think DJ Hazard went up after them.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it was, I've never been in a room where it was just like fucking, it was just fucking not.
Well, that's like, it's almost like the Rat Pack of Boston. You know, like they, you know, everybody, you felt the community of it.
It was like being at a sporting event.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how funny it was. It was like, that's the energy of the room, like being at the Garden.
Yeah.
And it was fucking crazy. I remember seeing that happening. And then, you know. And then somehow I got into this fucking thing.
But did you finish high school and shit?
I went to college. I went.
I wasn't being presumptuous.
I was in the rubber rooms. No, I went to 2 classes a day in 9th grade.
Yeah.
And then I worked my way out of that. 10th grade, I was in regular classes.
Yeah.
And I was in art, and I excelled in art. And then the art teachers loved me. 11th grade was great. 12th grade, unbelievable. I got a scholarship to Bunker Hill Community College for art. I was going to go be an art teacher. And I remember, never got in trouble. I think it was a week before we were graduating high school. I got kicked out of high school again. The guy behind me. I mean, nothing. No problems. For years. Just excelling and doing great.
Yeah.
Got a scholarship.
Yeah.
I remember the kid behind me was fucking with me. And he's going, hey, Bobby, you're a faggot. And I was like, yeah, faggot. I was like, all right, that's funny, dude, stop. He's like, you're a faggot. I'm like, dude, enough. Faggot. And I go, I'm not fucking around, dude. Shut the fuck up. Fag. I snapped. I picked my desk up. I threw my desk at the kid's head. One of those desk seats that are together.
Yeah.
I picked my threw, you fucking cocksucker, I'll murder you. And the teacher went, Robert Kelly. I go, fuck you too, fucking asshole.
It's a whole lifetime of rage comes out.
All came out. A week left.
Yeah.
A week left. And I remember walking, I just walked down the hallway right to the principal's office, and every kid in the school heard it. And they were all leaning out of the fucking doorways.
Yeah.
And I went, and Mr. D was like, hey, Bobby, what's up, buddy? How are you doing? I go, you're going to want to talk to me. His fist is black, comes in. He just fired. And he was like, what? And they let me graduate, but they suspended me for the last week. So I didn't go to school for the last week.
But you know what that was? That's like one of those things, right? So there you were at the precipice of everything turning around. And, you know, that fucking idea of who you were because of your fucking life took over.
Yeah.
I'm a bad kid.
Yeah. All that fucking thing that, you know, I'm gay.
Yeah.
Tom Tompkins, because I jerked a kid off when I was fucking six or whatever.
Was it? I guess it didn't get rid of it.
Yeah, it really fucking annoyed me, that cocksucker. He really bugged me, but yeah. Yeah, but then I went to Bunker Hill, man. And
you were going to be art teacher? What kind of art were you doing?
Dude, I was gonna work at a fucking Y or, you know, macaroni. Yeah, yeah. I could do art. I could paint.
Yeah.
I could draw, but not you know.
So when do you start doing the comedy? After Bunker Hill?
No, in Bunker Hill. Me and, there was a talent show, and we took an improv class as an elective. So we decided to do improv, and that's where I met Dane Cook. I met this kid, Al, was in my class, and these two other kids. And Al and Dane were best friends.
Yeah.
So we wrote sketches.
Yeah.
And I remember we went and saw an improv group at Tufts University called Cheap Socks.
Yeah.
And we just stole everything they did, like their improv games.
Yeah, were probably just improv games.
Yeah, that was it. We just took their improv. We took two improv games and we wrote a sketch.
Yeah.
And we rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed. And then we did this talent show at Bunker Hill and won. And that was it. And
Dane was at Bunker Hill or he was...
No, there? He was just a comic? Yeah, he was just hanging out.
Yeah.
We weren't comics.
Yeah.
We did improv first.
Yeah.
We did this group.
Yeah.
Where we would...
he wasn't doing comedy yet.
No, we were doing stand-up. All of our first things was at Catch a Rising Star. We all signed up on that stupid list.
Yeah.
And of course, Dane went up and killed.
Yeah.
You know, he had some fucking bit about
Speak and Spell.
He had Speak and Spell. Yeah. And then I think it was the Snowman bit. He had some, it was like crazy. And then we did that for a couple. We won the BCN Comedy Riot. We were the first comedy group to win
that.
What
year was that?
I forget. Remember the Rock of Boston show?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that. 14,000 people. And we got booed off stage. 14,000. They put us on after the Spin Doctors and before Fish.
Yeah.
Do improv.
Yeah, no good.
With no microphone. We all had handheld mics, but we all went out and bought different colored shirts.
Yeah,
we all had, like, I had purple, Dane had blue.
Yeah,
and we all went out with the same kind of outfit on, like a little uniform. And I remember we turned around and we started doing this sketch, and they all of a sudden, you just heard people. It was dead quiet. They thought we were a band.
Yeah.
And then we started talking, and I remember it just got really bad really fast.
Yeah.
And then just shit started getting thrown at us. And it was like the craziest shit ever. I've never been that hated by that many people.
Yeah.
In that fast a time.
Yeah.
And I remember we did the first sketch, and they were like, get the fuck off. But there was still like a few people in the front going, keep going, we like it.
It was enough.
It was enough to keep going.
Yeah.
And I remember I fucking took my shirt off and I went, people, 14,000 people, I go, people, we know you didn't come here to see comedy. You came here to see Spin Doctors. Fish. But before we leave, give us four things that piss you off and jobs. Fucking shoe, lighter. Fucking just started throwing more shit, and we all just ran off stage. It was bad.
That's pretty funny though.
Yeah, it was terrible. And I remember they fucking left me.
Yeah,
They were supposed to pick me up out front. They left me. I'm outside in front of the old Boston Garden on a payphone as the place is letting out, and everybody walking by is going, there he is, just pointing at me.
Yeah.
That was the fucking worst.
And then a life of comedy starts.
Yeah, I guess my main addiction.
Yeah.
But what if I become a good person?
Whatever.
What if you become...
You already are a good person.
Well, what if I become really healthy?
You won't.
Then I'm not going to be as funny.
You're not going to become...
What am I going to do on stage?
You're not going to become
people
really
healthy. People are nice. You ever notice?
No, I know. I'm fighting with the same thing. But you know, that is such a fucking hypothetical. And there's no reason to think that that will ever happen. What you could get is a little fucking peace of mind, a little self-acceptance.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not go crazy. You're not going to, what do you think is going to happen? You're just going to lobotomize yourself? No, it's just like basic management of like, you know, the bullshit that makes us crazy, which is like, fuck that guy. How come I don't have that? When is mine going to happen? Some of that could be turned down and you'll still be the same asshole you are.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you even spend a couple minutes just trying to be grateful,
Yeah. And make a gratitude list. I do that.
Yeah, it goes away. A lot of the shit goes away.
Gratitude list is like one of the best ones. Because when you're sitting there like feeling sorry for yourself, being resentful cunt, you're just sort of like, oh, make a gratitude list. Wow. Yeah. I like my furniture.
I like your furniture. I love your furniture.
No, I'm talking about doing you. You
know? Oh, I love my furniture too. Right.
I got this nice house. I got a kid that likes me.
I love my grass.
My wife is okay with me.
My wife is fucking, my wife is the best motherfucker in my life.
Yeah.
I luck the fuck out with this girl. She is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah.
If I was to go back, and she's the best thing that ever happened to me.
Well, good. So now then you go take care of yourself a little bit and she'll be happy. You'd be nicer, and probably.
Maybe have sex.
Less draining. Yeah, maybe a little sex.
Yeah.
You wouldn't exhaust her every day.
Yeah. Well, having sex with her?
No, just by being you.
I really do, man. I'm not even kidding, dude.
I know. How could you
She
not?
Is so not fucked up. Mm. She's fucked up, but...
Right.
But I really do exhaust this fucking poor woman.
Yeah. Gotta get that in check, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We good? You want to get something to eat?
I'm hungry.
Yeah, let's go eat.
That's another addiction I have to fight. What are we eating? Something healthy?
We can.
No.
All right.
Can I have one thing?
Yeah. What do you want, Mexican?
I'd love Mexican.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
Thanks. Love that guy. Love Robert Kelly. And I'm glad we had that conversation. And I've been in touch with him a bit since then. And right now, premiering the Get It Right band, who I hope I'm right, from Asheville, North Carolina, I think, doing a song I kind of co-wrote. They used words of mine taken from different monologues and whatnot and put it to music. The song is called However Broken It Is. You can hear more of this stuff. SoundCloud.com/the-get-right-band. But here is However Broken It Is, co-written by me, Mark Maron.
Thank you. I need to be deprogrammed. I need to be deprogrammed. I need to be deprogrammed.
Pretty cool, right? Good song. Boomer lives!